Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The director of Stop TB, WHO, Dr. Mario Reveloni, Dr. Marcos Spagnelli, and Dr. Niels, the executive director of the union. Dear colleagues, good evening. In the name of those who face the greatest challenges of global burden of disease, tuberculosis, HIV, tuberculosis and MDR, and XDR, and other debilitating lung and public health problems, I greet you. For those who experience critical shortages of human resources, those who have fewer than 2.3 doctors, nurses, and midwives per 1,000 people, for those being let down by the inability and indecisiveness of those in charge to tackle the human resources crisis, I greet you and welcome you to the Paris Conference. My name is Asma Al-Sunni. I come from Sudan, the largest country in Africa and one of the least developed, very rich with resources and burdened with conflicts. I am among the team that launched a successful NTB program in the Emro region with the Norwegian Heart and Lung Association as our development partner, as our main technical advisor for the WHO and the union. Our work has been modest gains. We moved with the model and experience and initiated comprehensive lung health approach project with our partners. Ladies and gentlemen, if poverty cannot be eradicated without a sound macroeconomic context, breaking the shackles of healthcare cannot be achieved without stronger focus on human resources. Most economists agree that it is the nation's human resources, not its financial capital or material resources, that ultimately determine the character and pace of its economic and social development. Human resources is crucial and key to the success and delivery of the MDGs to combat TB, TB, HIV, AIDS, and malaria, and to intensify the response on MDR, XDR, TB, to reduce child mortality and improve maternal health. Human resources is the most significant constraint on the three health-related MDGs. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to have the right people in the right place at the right time to deliver accessible, equitable, effective, and affordable services. We need to face performance challenges facing the health systems and global workforce. The global achievements of case detection of 60% and treatment success rate of 83% in a decade is a great achievement by countries, the World Health Organization, and the Stop TB partners, despite the variation in progress among different countries. The establishment of the Global Tuberculosis Monitoring and Surveillance System by the World Health Organization in the mid-1990s is another outstanding achievement, enabled us to have insight on progress and trend over time. We are fortunate again at this stage to have financial mechanisms in place such as the Global Fund to allow countries to receive funding for health system infrastructures, supplies and drugs to complement their own investments in health. However, we have at the same time a human resource crisis present in many countries, and that is jeopardizing the implementation of health care programs. The highly indebted poor countries, the HIPIC program, launched by the multilateral financial agencies in 1996 to alleviate the debt of poor countries, and the MDGs declaration, which have been adopted by international forums as in the United Nations General Assembly, the relevance that the two major agendas and their joint implementation, I repeat, joint implementation, cannot be overemphasized. Moreover, the HIPIC process is making fresh resources available to the underfinanced health sectors, as it requires that some 20% of resources made available to the eligible countries be directed to health sector. the health-related MDGs will not be achieved if countries cannot successfully address the issues of human resources. Lack of qualified health personnel due to the limited capacity to produce them and to retain those who have been trained, and in the case of Africa, due to the loss of AIDS, TB, and malaria. Irrelevant and outdated education mechanisms and content, poor capacity to regulate professional practice, insufficiently attractive incentive system, and ineffective management policies and practices. So the situation is critical, and we need to recognize and act urgently. Ladies and gentlemen, the performance of the health sector will only be good as the performance of men and women who provide the services. From the DOTS supervisor, the admission staff, to the most specialized health personnel. Why this has long been met with systematic neglect by the policymakers, by donors, by countries, remains to be questioned, explained, and addressed. Stakeholders, including the TB patients, health providers, planners, governments must be involved in the entire planning process to facilitate the human health resource development and planning. That is, everyone must be involved. Whether the explanation lies in their complexity, their multisectorial nature, their political content, or the lack of ready-made solutions, the fact is that health workforce issues have been overlooked by countries and by the international community until now, and we must take the matter more seriously and with more responsibility. The World Health Organization, the World Bank, the International Organization for Migration, the IOM, has developed a full working program to produce and disseminate sound policy advice. Again, the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, the UNESCO, mustered a consultative meeting on improving collaboration between health professionals, governments, and other stakeholders in human resources for health development. And strategies on human resources for health and development have been developed. The take-up and implementation by countries is weak, and countries and governments need to recognize that they have a crucial role to play. Ladies and gentlemen, the human resource development is a process. It's not a blueprint, and will be successful only if the main stakeholders participate in it. Top-down policy development simply does not work in this area, where professionals not only value their autonomy, but have the social and political capacity to defend it. Some countries have succeeded in adjusting their workforce to the health and service needs of their population, maybe a way out for those who look for immediate benefits. But the long-term reward of health workforce that does the right things and does them well is likely to be well worth the investment, and is the duty of all of you present here, all of you important people in this important meeting. And lastly, let me share with you three lessons regarding this, which I have learned over the years. First, for health to have a transformative effect on people and communities, the prospect of its realization must galvanize energy, ingenuity, and resources from within the poor communities we serve, from us poor communities. And truly have faith, actively participate, and actively contribute, invest money and material resources, and seek meaningful solutions to problems. It will not do to simply deliver health services to passive populations, even if the availability of health services is a necessary condition to maintaining good health. Second, the development of effective human resources for health systems is constrained by various elements of the health systems. These constraints may affect the operation of the health system itself, but the broader economic, political, and social systems also have important impacts, establishing and nurturing an environment whereby we can keep existing personnel and attract those overseas is paramount to turn the tide of the devastating phenomena of the brain drain. And thirdly, funding may be an important issue. But how those funds are used may be of equal importance. If the focus is on health outcomes and the prosperity of one's nation, self-destructive and selfish practices such as deliberately losing those best trained on political or any other irrelevant basis must be eliminated. Local partners and governments have a moral duty to uphold the interests of those they serve above their own, and thank you. May I call upon Marcos?
No, he said because I was being first, but
they
promoted the link.
They promoted the link?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so may I call on Professor Michel Kazansky, the ambassador of France in the fight against AIDS and communicable diseases, to read the message from the President of the Republic of France.
I shall be speaking French. Madame la Présidente et Monsieur le Directeur de l'Union internationale contre la tuberculose et les maladies respiratoires, Monsieur le Directeur du partenariat Halte à la tuberculose, Monsieur le Directeur du département Halte à la tuberculose de l'OMS, Mesdames et Messieurs, je suis particulièrement heureux de vous adresser ce message de bienvenue à l'occasion de l'inauguration de la 37e conférence mondiale de l'Union internationale contre la tuberculose et les maladies respiratoires. La France se félicite d'accueillir vos travaux, la lutte contre les grandes pandémies et plus généralement l'attention aux questions majeures de santé publique. N'est-ce pas le meilleur exemple de l'idéal de solidarité et d'humanisme que notre pays se veut d'incarner? La lutte contre la tuberculose, première cause de décès des malades du sida, est aujourd'hui inséparable du combat contre le VIH. Mais la tuberculose se propage aussi dans des régions où le taux d'infection par le VIH reste relativement faible, comme l'Afghanistan, certaines parties de l'Amérique centrale, ou certains pays d'Afrique de l'Ouest. Vaincre la tuberculose est un défi humain et sanitaire majeur. Il justifie la mobilisation de toutes les nations et celle des organisations internationales. Première institution à s'être consacrée spécifiquement à la lutte contre ces maladies, l'Union internationale contre la tuberculose et les maladies respiratoires accomplit depuis près de 140 ans un travail irremplaçable par son action d'information, de formation et de renforcement des capacités sanitaires dans les pays les plus touchés. Je remercie tout particulièrement pour leur action vigoureuse et déterminée la présidente de l'Union, Madame Asma Elsoni, et son directeur exécutif, Monsieur Niels Billot, ainsi que les représentants du partenariat Halte à la tuberculose de l'Organisation mondiale de la santé. Je salue également toutes celles et tous ceux qui sont venus à cette conférence partager leur expérience et leurs connaissances. Je me félicite que vous ayez décidé de mettre l'accent au cours de vos travaux sur une question cruciale, l'immense besoin de professionnels qualifiés pour améliorer la santé publique dans le monde. Nous savons en effet que le manque de ressources humaines dans le domaine de la santé compromet aujourd'hui gravement les efforts de la solidarité internationale. La France est à vos côtés dans le combat contre la tuberculose, à laquelle elle prend toute sa part depuis longtemps. Elle finance des projets de soutien aux stratégies nationales des pays du Sud. Elles ont obtenu des résultats significatifs, notamment à Djibouti, en Mauritanie, au Bénin ou en Centrafrique. Avec une contribution de 225 millions d'euros en 2006 et de 300 millions d'euros en 2007, la France s'investit massivement dans le Fonds mondial de lutte contre le sida, la tuberculose et le paludisme, qui porte aujourd'hui 60% de l'aide internationale extérieure dans le domaine de la tuberculose. Mais pour répondre aux grands défis de la santé publique dans le monde, l'augmentation des ressources d'aide publique au développement, si nécessaire soit-elle, ne suffira pas. Elle doit être complétée par de nouveaux mécanismes de financement. Et c'est là tout le sens de la contribution de solidarité sur les billets d'avion, que j'ai souhaité mettre en place. Elle est entrée en vigueur en France au 1er juillet dernier. L'essentiel de son produit sera affecté à United, la facilité internationale d'achat de médicaments. Dans la lutte contre la tuberculose, le rôle d'United sera déterminant. L'émergence de bacilles multirésistants nécessite des médicaments coûteux. Les laboratoires pharmaceutiques sont réticents à investir sur ces marchés qui ne sont pas toujours solvables. C'est pourquoi, après les actions déjà engagées qui permettront de procurer d'ici 2008 des médicaments au meilleur prix à 150 000 enfants atteints de tuberculose, United a inscrit dans ses prochaines actions le financement des médicaments contre la tuberculose multirésistante. Mesdames et messieurs, je forme tous mes vœux pour que votre conférence puisse faire progresser la sensibilisation, l'information et la recherche et contribue ainsi au recul de la tuberculose. Dans ce combat, vous pouvez compter sur la constance de mon engagement à vos côtés, Jacques Chirac.
We thank Dr. Michel and the President for his speech. May I call upon Dr. Marcos Peñali, the Executive Secretary of STOP-TB, to introduce Dr. George Sambayo, the UN Secretary General, Special Envoy for STOP-TB.
Good afternoon, colleagues. My name is Marcos Espinal. I'm the Executive Secretary of the STOP-TB Partnership, a global coalition of more than 500 partners around the world, all united to fight TB. This afternoon, I'm delighted to introduce the UN Secretary General Special Envoy to STOP-TB, Dr. Jorge Sampaio. Dr. Sampaio was appointed in May 2006 as the first UN Secretary General Special Envoy. Dr. Sampaio's main objective is to build awareness, to heighten TB into the political and development agenda of our national and international leaders. If we want to reach the Millennium Development Goal, we need to insert TB into the development and political agendas. We cannot tolerate TB to be neglected anymore. Dr. Sampaio, in 1995, was elected president of Portugal and was sworn in as president in March 1996. He was re-elected 5 years later in 2001. During the last decade, President Sampaio has made important contributions to several issues related to European affairs, including substance abuse, HIV/AIDS, human rights, and independence for East Timor. Today, I'm pleased to say after a few months, the Special Envoy has already made impact. In June 2006, he was introduced as a Special Envoy at UNGAS, the United Nations Global Assembly on AIDS. At the WHO 66 Regional Committee for Africa, President Sampaio delivered the main keynote and was welcomed by all the ministers and reminded everyone that TB is a long way to go still. And last month, President Sampaio met with Mr. Bill Clinton, former President of the United States, at the Clinton Summit, and truly remind all these world leaders that were in the Clinton Summit that TB cannot continue to be neglected. On behalf of the STOP-TB Partnership and the Union, I'd like to welcome President Sampaio, not before apologizing for his absence physically. President Sampaio had to underwent surgery for retinal detachment, and he was not authorized to travel and to take a plane. However, I'm pleased to say that we hopefully have President Sampaio now by live, by video. Is President Sampaio there?
Ah, yes.
Mr. President.
Mr. President.
How are you, Mark Spinal? Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you too. We are all excited that you are able to join us today. And I just introduce you. I'm not going to speak again. I'm going to pass the microphone to you. Thank you for joining us on behalf of the Union and the Stop TB Partnership in the Global Community on TB.
Well, first of all, I heard your presentation. I'm very happy that it's possible to at least be indirectly present at this important conference. I'm so sorry I cannot attend, but Mark has explained the reasons, and I hope that next week I will be informed to continue my activities. Let me greet the President of the Union and her very interesting speech, which I had the opportunity to hear. Let me greet the work of the Union throughout so many decades, and let us remind us all that we have this International Day of TB, 24th of March, 2007. It's the 125th anniversary of the discovery of the bacillus, Koch bacillus, and I think that we could really worldwide have a major nationally based also campaign to definitely focus and continue the work that the WHO and the Stop TB Partnership and all the other agencies and workers throughout the world. Let me greet in a very modest way and a very touching way all those who suffer from TB. The President has just said it in very important words, and I give my solidarity to her words and, of course, to those who suffer. And this is the main reason why we have as a theme for the International Tuberculosis Day on the 24th of March next year, TB anywhere is TB everywhere. We should have this motto in our heads and help all those that are investing to stop TB, all those who treat people to stop TB, all those who involve the community to stop TB and to the communities per se, all those who are fighting now the extreme threats to stop TB and who donate the skills to stop TB. For me, it has been an honor, and I'm really very sorry that I cannot be present. But I do hope that modern technology can at least give you my speech, and I did my best to address the main topic of this conference. It's a major topic because, as you mentioned in the WHO regional meeting in Africa in August, all the ministers of health on bilateral meetings, whom I had the pleasure to meet, really what they focused was, of course, money is necessary, of course, new vaccines, of course, drug exception, all that. But we don't have the people at a community base. And all the experiences in Africa or elsewhere that have indeed prepared people to be those who attack at least the combination of HIV and TB. And TB per se, we will obviously achieve the results which Marcus Espinal has pointed out, the MDG development goals. And I wish the conference all the best. I will be en route next week, I hope, with you and others in somewhere else in the world. But I wanted you to know that all your endeavors, all your effort, I give my solidarity to all of that. And now, since I have retired, as you have said, from a presidential office, I think that I am totally available to continue and to help this major work. We cannot forget that 5,000 people die per day from TB. We cannot forget that things are getting worse, although we have very good news, as you will see in my speech. So my best greetings to you all, my best greetings to the President of the Union, to the Secretary General, and, of course, to my good friends, Marcus Espinal and Ravidiani, who are there at this moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. We are delighted to have now the speech of President Sampaio, Global Responsibilities in Investing in the Health Workforce for Sustainable Health Systems. And we thank President Sampaio for announcing the theme of World TB Day. TB anywhere is TB everywhere. Thank you. Can we have the video, please?
Dr. Asma Elsene, President of the International Union Against TB and Lung Disease. Dr. Nils Billow, Executive Director of the Delegates of IUATLD. Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends. First of all, I would like to say a few words praising the miracles of technology. I felt really very sorry when I realized that I couldn't be with you on this very special occasion due to the unexpected retinal detachment surgery that prevented me from flying to Paris. I normally obey to what doctors say. But in the end, I am most happy to have the opportunity to address the conference and to be present somehow, thanks to the fantastic means of online communication. Let me now underline that I was extremely pleased to accept the kind invitation to take part in the opening session of the current 37th edition of the Union's annual international conference. May I extend to you all my warmest greetings. I was really very much looking forward to meeting you and to introducing myself. As you might know, the United Nations Secretary General, Mr. Kofi Annan, has appointed me as his first special envoy to stop tuberculosis. It is indeed in this capacity that I am here today. Above all, my role as special envoy to stop TB, as I see it, aims at helping in achieving the Millennium Development Goals, MDG, to have, and I quote, halted and started to reverse the incidence of TB by 2015, as well as the Stop TB Partnerships 2015 targets to halve the prevalence and death rates from the 1990 baseline. This is why I consider that my action has to focus on giving additional political visibility to this sometimes neglected disease, on helping to generate public awareness about TB, and on continuing to persuade world leaders to play their part in fully funding and implementing the global plan to stop TB 2006-2015. My friends, we must not, after all, forget that TB is an emergency. It continues to kill 1.7 million people each year, or 5,000 men, women, and children every day, and nevertheless, we are talking of a curable disease. How could one refuse to become the spokesman for this pandemic and to fight against this civilizational shame? Let me now, ladies and gentlemen and dear friends, share some thoughts with you on the subject I was asked to address here today. And this subject is global responsibilities in investing in the healthcare workforce for sustainable health. May I divide my presentation into three main parts? I will begin by outlining the progress made regarding the assumption of responsibilities in global health, particularly in the fight against infectious diseases like HIV/AIDS, malaria, and TB during the last years. Secondly, I will try to examine the problem of the healthcare workforce, particularly in low-income and high-burden disease countries. And thirdly, I would like to focus on some strategies that could better ensure a sustainable health policy regarding its human component in order to meet the MDG and the Stop TB Partnerships 2015 targets to control TB. So let's get to the first point. In other words, the progress made in assuming global responsibilities in health, a major achievement, health is a part of the global agenda. I really think that everybody will agree that today health issues are clearly on the global development agenda, and they are seen as an increasingly global public good. This is the good news. In the increasingly globalized world, marked by migrations and fast movements of people at worldwide scale, public health issues indeed call for domestic policies, but also require international measures and an integrated regional approach as events overseas affect each country's health. Communicable diseases are a most obvious example of these externality aspects of public health. That is, no single country can alone prevent or contain communicable diseases in order to protect the health of its population. This increasing awareness of cross-border and global issues in health is also expressed in the growing attention paid to health by non-health sector entities such as the World Bank, the United Nations, the European Union, or the G8, as well as by the private, corporate, and charity sectors such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, the Global Business Coalition Initiative. Another important point concerns progress achieved in mobilizing resources. Apart from commitment to further support for the Global Fund to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria, the international community is engaged in developing innovative financing mechanisms, such as the International Finance Facility and the UNITAID, which, as you know, is an international drug purchase facility being established by France, Brazil, Chile, Norway, and the United Kingdom, funded by an international air ticket solidarity levy. However, regarding TB, there is still much to do since to fully fund the Global Plan to Stop TB 2006-2015, additional resources have to be mobilized. Despite the remaining problems, I do think these examples are obvious indicators of health moving up the global agenda and thus being considered part of a minimum for a decent world. In my view, we have good reasons to be optimistic. At the international level, there is a clearer political commitment and a stronger public awareness, and more resources are available. These more favorable conditions give renewed impetus to the fight against infectious diseases, but also create added responsibilities with a view to producing better results. Our shared aim, dear friends, our common commitment, and our motto has to be to do more, to do faster, and to do better. More, fast, and better, since emergencies like TB cannot wait. Now let's get to the second point, the critical problem of the healthcare workforce, particularly in low-income and high-burden disease countries. Now let's begin by taking two examples, TB and the African region. Firstly, as you all well know, but probably not the average person, TB is an affordably preventable, curable disease. The medicines that cure TB cost about $12 per case of illness. Secondly, let me remind you that the African region has the highest TB per capita burden. Although having only 11% of the world's population, Africa contributes approximately with 25% of TB cases. For example, in 2004, about 2.3 million people fell ill with TB in the African region, where TB incidence is rising at over 4% a year, fueled by the HIV epidemic. 34 of the 46 member states in the region face an estimated TB prevalence rate of 300 per 100,000 population, and 9 countries are among the 22 global TB high-burden countries. Now, what is my point? Apparently, TB could be thought of as a not-too-difficult global health problem, as it is an affordably preventable, curable disease. But in reality, it is quite a complex one. Therefore, we can ask, why? Mainly because of all the problems related to poverty, malnutrition, and sanitation shared by all developing countries. But also because of the lack of infrastructures. And by infrastructures, I mean physical, institutional, and human components of the healthcare system. Because of infrastructure gaps, millions of people die every day. Now let me concentrate on the human resources component, the blood, really, of the entire healthcare system. Of course, there is a severe shortage of physicians, nurses, and healthcare workers in many places around the world. I ought to emphasize that the crisis in human resources for the health is one of the greatest challenges for TB control and for the Millennium Development Goals in general. To overcome this shortfall, action is dramatically needed at every level of the health system, programs, partnerships, and global stakeholders. Let me tell you a story. I had the opportunity to attend a WHO African Regional Committee last August in Addis Ababa, where I met several African ministers of health on a bilateral basis. If I had to summarize shared remarks, I would say that they all pointed out to the lack of human resources at every level as a major, if not the main problem. In this respect, I particularly remember how a minister from a big country put it bluntly to me, asking me if I knew that there were more doctors in a large hospital in Lisbon than in all his country, with twice the population of Portugal and 10 times bigger. Moreover, they all complained about lack of appropriate training and asked for help in this regard. All mentioned difficulties in recruitment and retention because of disincentives of the work environment. All complained about the brain drain that draws away health professionals. I recall this personal experience because, in my view, it gives quite an accurate picture of the global health workforce crisis going on, in particularly in low-income, high-disease burden countries. As you probably know, the shortage is about 4.3 million healthcare workers of all sorts. But in Africa, this problem is much more acute, as while they have about 25% of the global disease burden, only 1.3% of the world's healthcare workers actually work there. These figures show quite well how the global burden and resources are unequally distributed with huge disparities. We also find the same inequalities within the countries themselves, between urban and rural areas, as existing resources tend to be clustered in the urban areas. This is the bad news. Now I would like to end this point again with some good news. And the good news is the success stories about ways of overcoming concrete problems. In this respect, may I briefly recall the Ethiopian experience in training primary healthcare people. Firstly, Ethiopian policymakers have identified main areas of action, for example, maternal health, child health, HIV, HTB, and malaria, and decided to focus on primary health care, particularly in the rural areas. Secondly, they made a double decision to concentrate training in low-level and mid-level health extension workers and to train as many as possible. With this strategy, they were able to train 9,900 people in 2 years and deploy them. But the whole plan aims at achieving a total of 30,000 trained health workers over the next 2 years. How they could produce such stimulating results in so short a time? As far as I was know and I heard from the responsible people, by a bottom-up approach. They did it by a bottom-up approach, realistic but ambitious, based on the use of existing assets. For example, instead of starting by building nursing schools, They use existing technical and vocational training centers so that it was like a shortcut. They invested in outcomes of infrastructure in tangible ways, banking on increasing the horizontal carrying capacity of the health system. They also based their strategy on the will of individual communities to develop a sense of ownership of their own infrastructure, on engaging people in achieving improvements in order to guarantee the sustainability of health systems. I think all of us can learn from this Ethiopian experience. Of course, there is a huge difference between our developed countries and countries in Africa, Asia, or South America, as well as between countries within these regions. But solving global health problems means sharing experiences and designing and implementing common strategies the better to overcome gaps and the challenge we face. Now let me go back to the third point. If you remember, it relates to the strategies that could better ensure a sustainable health policy regarding its human component. In order to meet Millennium Development Goals, the MDGs, and stop to be partnership targets, there is indeed a critical need to strengthen the workforce to improve global lung health. Let me start by stressing that the Global Plan to Stop TB, 2006-2015, outlines increasing human resources capacity as a priority TB control activity over the next 10 years. Let me tell you and remind you, there is a funding gap of over United States $30 billion for the global plan and a strong need for increased funding of global TB control generally in Europe as well as in Africa. But tackling the human resource crisis goes beyond TB control alone. To address this problem, at least three aspects have to be considered. Firstly, it requires the implementation of human resource development strategies in the public health sector, i.g., more attractive career and salary structures and improved training, of course, as well as the establishment of partnerships with communities and all healthcare providers in order to use and engage all available human resources. Allow me to emphasize clearly that in my personal view, equal access to health for all is a matter of human rights, and only democracies offer rights. By this I mean that there has to be national health infrastructures so that we can make sure that poor people have rights and have access to these rights. Therefore, an overall human resources strategy in the health sector has to be designed by governments who are really responsible for it. This is to say that the private and corporate sectors, NGOs, charities, associations, and foundations have indeed an important part to play in the health field. But the action, in my view, has to occur within public policies defined and coordinated by governments. Secondly, it requires reinforcement of international action on health education and training. Health education remains for me a critical point because it is the basis of everything, a way of empowering people in preventing health problems. Education in health is, in a way, as important as treating diseases. And now, regarding training, needless to stress that there must be better coordination of international actions and initiatives to avoid overlaps and gaps and to ensure that they meet real needs of people. In this respect, I do think that national health authorities and national health policymakers have a most important role to play, not only in strengthening the feeling of ownership, but also in ensuring the long-term sustainability of efforts and of the results. And now, thirdly, it requires a broad multilateral framework on migrations and for the cross-border movement of people, preventing the brain drain from poor to rich countries. As is well known, this problem is particularly acute in essential social services such as education and health. While domestic policies to increase the incentives and opportunities for skilled labour to remain at home are an important part of the solution, it has also been suggested that the industrialised countries should coordinate their hiring policies with developing countries facing such skill shortages in essential services. Dear friends, measures to stimulate a process of a somewhat skill circulation, such as training, tax incentives to stimulate the return of skilled migrants to their home countries, etc., etc., could be considered because they would benefit both industrialized and developing countries. The former could still continue to hire skilled labor from developed countries. The latter could also benefit from this circulation without being deprived of the very category of workers that they need most and without suffering the loss from the investment in training. The adoption of a kind of, let me say, a code of good practices for healthcare workers' migration could be a useful tool to prevent a permanent brain drain from poor to rich countries and to stimulate the return of skilled migrants to their home countries. Now, dear friends, thank you very much for your patience until now. Let me end with some final remarks. As United Nations Secretary General's Special Envoy to Stop TB, I am committed to developing new ways of supporting the fight against TB. To ensure that my role is productive, I will be working closely with the WHO and the Stop TB Partnership, which are heading the fight against TB. But I will not neglect regular direct contacts both with national and local authorities, private or public partners, and with the civil society, non-governmental organizations and individuals working together to achieve ultimately a world free of TB. And in this regard, your own input, dear friends, is invaluable. You can count on my committed efforts to increase advocacy to focus United Nations attention to TB control in general and TB control in the context of the Universal Access Principle. I will spare no effort to continue to advocate the mobilization of additional resources for TB control, to reinforce international and national commitments for TB control, and to ensure that money goes to those in great need. Of course, much has to be done in order to reach out to political leaders to prioritize TB control and address the human resource problem. TB is still not the number one priority in international political and development agendas. There is a need to raise the profile of TB and to de-stigmatize TB. There is a need for enhanced collaboration to bring all players in the TB control field together to make a cohesive effort in the fights against TB. And there is a need for a strong TB movement to answer the TB crisis equivalent to that for HIV/AIDS. The International AIDS Society, IAS, is the world's leading independent association of HIV/AIDS professionals. I do think a similar movement for TB is needed. Count on me to support your efforts in order to reinforce the Union, a way of calling on strength through unity. And thank you very much for your kind attention.
An important speech from an important man who was the head of the student union in Lisbon University, who fought as a president for human rights and democracy and the right person to fight with us for a world free of TB. May I call on Dr. Mario Ribellioni, the director of Stop TB department.
Dear Asma, dear Niels, Marcos, Winston, cher Michel, President Sampaio, still connected perhaps, colleagues and friends, on behalf of the World Health Organization, I'm happy to welcome every one of you, TB controllers, TB researchers, financial partners, community and patient representatives, NGOs, government officials, all of you. Every year we convene here in Paris to exchange ideas, to share information, to learn from each other. This is ever more necessary now in 2006, given the recent threat of XDR-TB. We at WHO have been working with our member states behind the scenes sometimes, leading from the front in other occasions, in developing the necessary responses and policies that in the end must strengthen one, our TB control and care efforts with what we have available, and two, must stimulate stronger, much stronger investment in research to have the better tools that we all want to have available. Ladies and gentlemen, the theme of this year is strengthening human resources. It resonates today strongly with the challenges that we are facing. We need more people, many more people. You just heard it from President Sampaio, and more people who know more. We need quality and we need quantity. What we especially need is young professionals, young nurses, young doctors, young policymakers, young community leaders who can fuel the innovations and the transformation that are necessary to create the breakthroughs, those breakthroughs that will deliver in the end life-saving cures and universal access to all suffering from TB in this world. Yes, universal and equal access to the best available diagnostics, to the best treatments, to the best preventive measures, since our aim is only one, and is that of curing people, avoiding deaths, and relieving suffering. So, talking about the young health workforce, it is my pleasure to introduce to you one of my young colleagues, Abigail Wright, who at the World Health Organization works on TB drug resistance and has been instrumental in the last few years in developing MDR-TB surveillance policies and more recently in the efforts to face XDR-TB. Abigail joined us 5 years ago and has proven to be an asset to WHO. She's one of our young staff that we nurture and that will carry, we hope, the torch for the decades to come. Abigail, if you want to join me.
Thank you, Mario, for that kind introduction. I'm honored to be with all of you here in Paris to open the 37th Union World Conference on Lung Health. When Niels asked me to spend a few minutes discussing my commitment to public health, initially I panicked. Wondering what could I say to a room full of people who've committed their lives to this field when I've been working in public health for less than a decade. But I suppose that's the point. I represent the new generation. I took a rather circuitous route to public health in the first place by way of studying comparative literature. I moved to the Indian subcontinent at 19 to study Sanskrit. While there, I lived with a family of 10 people in a one-bedroom house for almost 3 years. They were the most profound years of my life. I witnessed the completely preventable deaths of two members of the family I lived with and the death of three women in my village in childbirth, all because healthcare was not easily accessible where we lived. During that year, I decided that art and literature were not possible without life, education, and livelihood. I decided I could always read and study literature, but I needed to spend the majority of my time serving the public in a very practical way. It was a fundamental decision, and it was about responsibility. I needed a job that would serve people and improve lives, and the more lives, the better. I could have worked in water infrastructure, public education, city planning, economics. It almost didn't really matter. But I chose health because I witnessed its absence and it had an impact on me. So the decision was very simple. I started working at WHO in the Stop TB department in drug resistance 5 years ago. While working at WHO, I've had the opportunity to work with many of you. And at my first union meeting, I was almost beside myself with shock at all of the dissent within the TB community. Different agencies and different people have different views on how TB control should be implemented. I figured it was difficult enough to raise the profile of one disease. Why should the believers fight amongst themselves? But what I eventually realized is that dissent arises when people are passionate, and because there simply isn't one answer. This was an aspect of dynamism. And dynamism and very effective coordination of end goals is what has brought TB very justifiably to the front of the platform. And as a result, exciting movement is taking place. I'll give you one example. When I started at WHO, treatment of MDR in the public sector was still controversial. At the start, there were 5 DOTS plus pilot projects, and now 40 countries are treating MDR-TB according to international guidelines. The goal is to treat 800,000 and more people with MDR-TB over the next 10 years. Several countries are now reporting treatment outcomes almost as high as those for susceptible TB. If that isn't inspiring, then I don't know what is. The possibilities in improving global health have grown infinitely in the short time that I've worked in this field, with the advent of new funding opportunities and new partners and new commitments to getting better drugs and technology to patients. But increasing opportunities do, however, make the task more complex. It means that we have to work even harder and organize ourselves and our systems more effectively than before to deliver services to people. A lot of the work that needs to be done is hard. It is not glamorous, and the reward is not immediate. But it is what we do. And I'm inspired by the commitment of the people I work with on a daily basis. But we need more of these people if we're going to do what we say we're going to do. And we need to figure out a way to find those people, train and mentor those people, and put and keep them in the right places. So my choice of public health was arbitrary. The work I do may not be as enjoyable as the study of literature. And there will always be times when I'm tired and I'm frustrated. But when people work together and public health policy is implemented and it works, it certainly is a beautiful thing. And that's what keeps me motivated. In the future, I will remain committed to public health and to TB. It doesn't mean that I'll always work in it, but I will continue to serve the public. And I will be a better public servant for my time spent in the TB community. Thank you. I'd like now to introduce another young colleague, Heather Ignatius, from the TB Alliance, to come and speak.
Thank you, Abby. It is an honor to be here. My name is Heather Ignatius, and I work in the Policy Department at the Global Alliance for TB Drug Development. I'm also the Secretariat for the New Drugs Working Group of the Stop TB Partnership. I've been asked to speak to you today about why, as a young person, I have chosen to work in TB. And as the youngest person, I think, on the panel, I hope that provides a truly unique experience for you. It is widely recognized that youth offers an idealistic, optimistic, and hopeful outlook on life. I would like to share with you a quote from the American writer Pearl Buck. She writes, "The young do not know enough to be prudent, and therefore they attempt the impossible and achieve it generation after generation." Since I can assume that I have not been invited here today to impart the vast wisdom of my experiences about the fields of TB and global health, I will offer you what I can as a young person: unabashed idealism, optimism, and hope for our field. I was a complete newcomer to the health field, let alone to TB, when I started at the TB Alliance 2 years ago. The union conference in 2004 was my first real introduction to this community, and I was struck by how small and how cohesive it seemed. This is an appealing concept to someone on a mission to save the world. It means that each one of us makes a difference. Every one of our efforts is essential and crucial to the success of this endeavor. However, as a person who grew up steeped in the culture of technology in California's Silicon Valley, the one thing that I couldn't help but notice is that new technologies for TB are clearly absent. I often hear the phrase, TB is curable. But for so many people suffering from TB, that is simply not the case. We are fighting a disease this millennium with last millennium's tools. And despite our best efforts, many people suffering from TB do not receive treatment. And in many countries, healthcare systems are overwhelmed by the amount of time and effort needed to treat TB with the tools we have today. The Global Plan to Stop TB acknowledges that without new diagnostics, drugs, and vaccines, it will be impossible to achieve our goal of eliminating this disease as a public health threat. The good news is that we are closer today than we have been in decades to having new technologies to diagnose, treat, and prevent TB. This is a critical juncture for our community in which the investments of recent years will come to fruition only if we can secure sufficient resources and commitment, both political and financial. We must keep our eyes on the prize. I'd like to share with you an experience that I had while coordinating the development of the new drug section of the Global Plan last year. On a writing teleconference of the committee that was writing, the following language was proposed. It is conceivable that the course of TB therapy could be reduced even to 10 to 12 days before 2050. A few members of the committee took issue with this statement, pointing out that while the plan should be aspirational, it should also steer clear of hyperbole if it were to be credible. I was inspired by the response from one of the members of the group. He said, "Hyperbole? No. This is reality. In fact, forget 2050. We will have a regimen that short long before then." It is this spirit of determination that fuels innovation. For those of us who have grown up in the age of technology, one thing seems certain, that innovation is a product of time and dedication only. We have great faith that innovation will come, that no obstacle is insurmountable, that our ability to succeed is dependent only on the amount of resources and dedication that we are willing to commit to our endeavors. Part of that is youth talking, but there is something to be said for an optimistic and determined attitude leading to a self-fulfilling prophecy. As Perlbuck noted, some of the greatest problem solving has been accomplished by people too uninformed to be discouraged. Sometimes the biggest obstacle to a breakthrough can simply be our mindset. So based on the experiences of my short career in global health, I will end with what I accept as truth. I know that in my lifetime, I will see TB eradicated. I know that the people in this room will be critical to the achievement of that goal. I know that our small but growing community, committed and working together to find solutions, can make a major impact on the health of so many. Perhaps my optimism is a byproduct of communicating these messages to policymakers, or perhaps it's naivete. But I hope that it helps some of you remember the reasons why you initially chose this field as well. Thank you. I would also like to invite Nevin Wilson from the union to come up and share his experiences.
Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. My name is Nevin Wilson, and I am from that great subcontinent of India, which also hosts a third of the world's TB burden. Human resource issues are a system-wide constraint to the successful implementation of health initiatives. And this year, the theme for the 37th World Conference is strengthening human resources for better lung health. I am privileged to stand before you this evening, both as a witness to and a beneficiary of this process. I was asked to present myself as a case study of this process of human resource strengthening, and to do this in three parts: my past, the present, and the future. The process itself has included different interventions at different times, and the highlight of these was the junior consultancy program that I did with the union. First, my past. This is the period from 1989 to 2000, a period of 11 years, when I served as a medical officer in a very rural primary healthcare setting, working with a vulnerable tribal community in the forests of South India. It was a time of intense work. I used to see more than 15,000 patients a year. It was a time of anger, of frustration, sometimes of despair. I would characterize this period as a time of passion with very little perspective. Then the present. This is the period from 2000 to 2006. The first 3 years I worked with the WHO supporting the revised National TB Control Program in India, in the state of Tamil Nadu. This was a population of 65 million, and I had the intense privilege and success of working with this program and seeing it rapidly expand to cover the entire 65 million population in just a little over a year. The last 3 years was with the union. I started with them as a junior consultant, then moved on to become a full-time international consultant, and now serve as the director of the union's resource center for the Southeast and Western Pacific regions, located in New Delhi, India. This period of intense learning by doing has strengthened existing skills and developed new ones. The passion has been challenged and channeled and has also developed perspective. Now to the future. I would like to thank the many colleagues and friends, patients I have met and worked with, and lastly, my family, for their patience with me and their investment in me. The avenue of opportunity to work likewise with other healthcare workers and strengthen human resources within health services now stretches ahead of me. I will endeavor to do my best. Thank you. I now invite Parvez Tufail to the podium.
Thank you so much. And I have a long list to say thanks. And as a human resource, I would love to thank, especially love to thank OSI and TAG, who developed my capacity to be here at this stage to speak on the issue. And I also like to thank Dr. Karam Shah, Dr. Hassan Sadiq, our National TB Control Program managers, who invested me a lot and built my capacity and provided backup support to be here. And I also want to say thanks to my dearest friend, Dr. Zafar Iqbal, who is sitting here, who helped me a lot to understand the TB issue and the other health issues. And I also want to thank WHO, Dr. Mario, Marcus, and Union to provide me this opportunity to speak on this issue. And I am the human resource developed by you all. And I also want to thank especially my dearest colleagues, the patients who are suffering with the TB and TB-HIV, and they are my source. They are my backup support, and they are my passion to work with. And as we all know, that the issue of the TB and TB-HIV is not a new issue. And we all know that TB is a silent killer. And the patient of TB and HIV should understand that these are the two issues, but these are the two sides of the same picture. Though there's no need of comparison, but there is a need to understand that HIV is more privileged, having lot many resources, ideas, and activism. And there are lot many investment in HIV, but TB is still in the dark and ancient phase. As we heard that we are getting into 125th anniversary, but we are still having the same tools. We need to have new tools. And we are having same tools, old tools, medicines, which are not addressing the current needs like MDR and XDR. And TB needs to be romanticized for quick action to address the TB and TB-HIV issue. And we are all experiencing a lot many deaths. I lost a number of my family members due to this disease. And patients like me and others who are suffering a lot many issues, stigma, discrimination, which is increasing day by day. And patients are still suffering for the new diagnosis, new vaccines, and new drugs. And again, there's a need to involve, to have a joint effort, and the need is there to have joint initiative to address this issue. And there are a lot of the echoes addressing and emphasizing the involvement of religious leaders, policymakers, NGOs, different networks, but where are the patients? They are still less visible. They are still less active, and they are still less accessed. They are still waiting for new tools, new drugs, more money, and resources. On behalf of the patients infected and infected with TB and TB-HIV people, I want to offer patient support to WHO, to Global Fund, to Union, and UNAIDS and other agencies, and looking for their support to involve us in designing, implementation, monitoring, and other activities. We will strengthen you. We will never let you down. We are your support, and you are our support. And we demand more involvement of TB and TB-HIV patients and have patients' charter, which is like here. We have patient's charter, and this is one of the tools which can be implemented, and this is one of the key which we can take with us, and we can go with this. And we also want to see our friends, relatives, children, husbands, wives, sisters, brothers, who can remain with us if we have the cure for the disease. And this is only because we can, if we invest more in research, as TAG has done a great assessment of the donations, and we are just having 2.6 billion for 10 years to invest on drugs, on research, and we need more investment so we can have more and active research, and we can develop new quick tools. We need quick new drugs now, not after 10 years, after 15 years, or after 20 years. So I want to close with the famous quote, which is shared by Carol, and she said, you should also say this, like, nothing for us without us. And I also want to emphasize on the quotes which come from the community people, which I am representing here. They said, like, patients are not part of the problem. They are part of solution. And they also said, patients are not useless. They are useless. You can use us, we can provide you support, and we can achieve the thing, the society, which will be the TB-free society. Believe in us, trust in us, we will give you the result beyond your expectation. Love you all. Thank you so much.
Now we will move to the award ceremony and the Union Scientific Prize of $2,000 is awarded to a researcher under 45 years of age for work on tuberculosis or non-tuberculous lung disease during the past 2 years. Our winner for the scientific prize is Dr. Stephen Lone. The focus of Dr. Stephen Lone research is HIV-associated tuberculosis in the era of antiretroviral treatment. A 40-year-old clinician funded by the United Kingdom Wellcome Trust, Dr. Lone is based at the University of Cape Town, South Africa, where he is a research associate at the Desmond Tutu HIV Center and senior lecturer in infectious and tropical diseases. His research on tuberculosis and TB-HIV has led to the publication of 16 articles in journals such as The Lancet, The AIDS, and the British Medical Journal over the past 2 years. His findings have offered important insights into our understanding of the impact of HIV on the incidence of TB and have made a vital contribution to our knowledge of the incidence, risk factors, and impact of the TB on antiretroviral programs. A native of Britain, Dr. Lone completed his medical training at the University of Nottingham Medical School, although he conducted his doctoral research at the U.S. Centers for Disease Prevention and Control prior to moving to South Africa in 2005. He held appointments in the U.K. and spent 4 years in Ghana, where he taught at the University of Science and Technology and also conducted training for the Ghana National TB Control Program. With his clinical expertise, epidemiological skills, laboratory training, and public health experience, Dr. Lone is poised to make outstanding contributions to our understanding of the TB-HIV epidemic, and the union is pleased to award you, Dr. Lone, if you can come to the presidium.
I'm very grateful to the union and its presiding officers for this award. It's a tremendous encouragement for our ongoing work in South Africa. But it reminds me of two important things. Firstly, research is teamwork, and I must acknowledge my phenomenal colleagues, Professor Robin Wood, Dr. Linda Gail Becker, Dr. Matasim Badri, and Dr. Landon Meyer, for their phenomenal contribution to the work that I'm being acknowledged for. And secondly, the fact that we've been able to do so much research in Cape Town reflects the fact that there is one heck of a TB problem in the countries of Southern Africa. In some of the communities where I work, rates are now approaching 2,000 per 100,000 per year, almost unprecedented. And in 2005, the WHO declared a regional emergency, mandating urgent and extraordinary actions. And I find it a pressure upon myself and my other colleagues working in South Africa that we must find solutions to this urgent problem. And we will continue to try and make inroads to find those urgent solutions. Thank you.
May I ask Mr. Susumu Kaneko to process Princess Shishibu Global Tuberculosis Memorial Award.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Prince Chichibu Memorial TB Global Award has been given yearly since 1998 by Japan Anti-TB Association in collaboration with the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease in recognition of the distinguished achievements of a selected individual whose work has made a great contribution to international anti-tuberculosis activities. The selection is made according to the recommendation of the Awards Committee of the Union. The late Princess Chichibu lost her husband, Prince Chichibu, due to tuberculosis when no modern TB drugs were yet available. Her sorrow and grief moved her to devote herself throughout her life to the prevention of TB and promotion of TB control activities, both nationally and globally, as the patroness of JATA. This award is established based upon her will to make this world free of TB so that nobody should suffer from TB and lose his or her life due to this disease. The winner of the award for 2006 is Dr. Thomas R. Frieden for his outstanding leadership in promoting the global combat against TB, both within the US and internationally. Dr. Frieden was instrumental in turning the tide of the TB epidemic in New York City in the early 1990s, reducing reported cases of TB overall and halting an epidemic of multi-drug resistant TB. Dr. Frieden inspired massive expansion of the DOTS strategy in India, improving access to care, quality of diagnosis, treatment success, and saving hundreds of thousands of lives. He currently carries on his work with equal vigor as Commissioner of Health and Mental Hygiene of New York City. Because of these achievements and others too numerous to mention at this time, I, on behalf of Princess Akishino, current patroness of JATA, would like to present the award to Dr. Frieden. This year, it is a special honor, as many of you may know, that Princess Akishino welcomed the birth of her son on September 6, 2006. Now, Dr. Fujiwara, would you come forward to accept this year's award on behalf of Dr. Frieden? Dr. Jose Caso, sorry.
Dr. Frieden was not able to be here today, but he asked me to transmit this message to all of you. I thank the Japan Anti-Tuberculosis Association and the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease for this honor. And I dedicate this year's Princess Chichibu Memorial TB Global Award to tuberculosis control workers everywhere. Tuberculosis control is about persistence, every single day on the front lines of the epidemic. Our success comes one patient at a time. It is the overburdened health worker who, when a patient mentions a cough, thinks tuberculosis and orders sputum samples for diagnosis. It is the lab technician who, despite hours of peering in a microscope, rigorously examines each smear for the full 5 minutes. It is the procurement and logistics officer who obtain quality anti-tuberculosis drugs, ensuring that they are available when a patient needs them. It is the treatment observer, often a volunteer, who builds a human bond with patients that not only facilitate cure, but reknits the fabric of society. Direct observation is the cornerstone of the DOTS strategy, and is the only method proven to ensure a high cure rate on a community-wide program basis. Tuberculosis is a constant reminder that we are all connected by the air we breathe. Patients with tuberculosis are often rejected by their communities because of fears of infection. Tuberculosis control workers deserve credit and full support for their work, not just because it is ethically the right thing to do, but because also it is only by supporting them that we are able to provide the high quality, convenient care to patients that is necessary to stop the TB epidemic. Tuberculosis is preventable and curable, and in many parts of the world, tuberculosis is being controlled. However, we still have far to go. Tuberculosis control is hard work that requires energy and persistence by both patients and programs. Frontline tuberculosis control is not glamorous, but it is today our single most important strategy to ensure that patients are diagnosed, treated, and cured. Persistence is key. Tuberculosis can be controlled when appropriate policies are implemented, followed, and continued. Thank you very much.
May I call upon Professor Maurya Changyang, the co-editor of the International Journal, to introduce the winner.
Madam President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. It is with great pleasure and honor for me to introduce Professor Margaret Backlake as the Union Medalist in recognition for her contributions to world lung health. Professor Backlake, known to her friends as Margot, graduated from the University of Witwatersrand, Johannesburg. She then pursued her medical training at a medical postgraduate medical school at Hammersmith Hospital, London, England. She then returned to teach in her own medical school after her training in England. At that time, she also worked as the physiologist to the Miners Pneumoconiosis Bureau in Johannesburg, where she developed the lung function laboratory and conducted clinical and epidemiological studies in almost 500,000 of miners. In 1957, Margot and her family moved to Montreal, where she began her long and illustrious career at the McGill University. She spent the first 10 years in the Department of Medicine at McGill, among a group of very prominent researchers, names such as Ronald Christie, David Bates, and Peter Perry. However, she made her mark in physiology by improving our understanding of the cardiopulmonary response to exercise and the mechanism of airway dysfunction. However, the most important part of her career came in 1967 when she joined the Department of Epidemiology at McGill. She established the Respiratory Epidemiology Unit, where she carried out many seminal studies on the health effects of asbestos exposure in Quebec miners and millers, and make significant contributions to the understanding of occupational and environmental lung diseases. She demonstrated that clinically significant airflow limitation can occur in workers exposed to asbestos and grain dust, and that these effects are independent of smoking. and established for the first time that chronic airway disease can occur as a result from organic and inorganic dust exposure. She drew our attention to the variation in lung function between individuals and between populations and the importance of standardization of lung function measurements in distinguishing between signals and noise. She also taught us gender differences in the effect of exposure and in lung diseases. Margot has been very active in many professional societies, as you can see, she was the president of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Quebec, the president of Canadian Thoracic Society, and as you can see, she has been on many grants review committee and acted as advisor to the International Labour Office at WHO. She has been on the editorial board for a number of journals, including our own journal. Her major contribution, however, has been in the area of international lung health, for which she has been awarded the Union Medal today. Margot was among one of those first few who was in China, visited and taught as early as 1973. She remains strong links with South Africa, her mother country, and in 1984, she returned to Johannesburg, where she established the epidemiology unit in the National Institute for Occupational Health and conducted many studies in foundries and grain mills. She supervised many graduate students from developing countries attending the McGill University and established the Kenya McGill Research Affiliation. She also has been the director of the summer epidemiology course in the McGill University for many years. And this course is important because this is the course attended by many international students. And then the other thing is that important contribution is that she has been the curriculum co-director of the Union and ATS-sponsored International Respiratory Epidemiology course in many countries, such as Mexico, Kenya, South Africa, and Chile. She's still teaching the basic techniques in lung health course in the Congress today. It is therefore not surprising that Margot has received many awards. And one of the things of note is that she has been a career investigator of the Medical Research Council of Canada for a prolonged period of 25 years. She's the Fellow of the Royal Society of Canada and received the Distinguished Achievement Award of the American Thoracic Society and also the World Lung Health Award of the American Thoracic Society and Doctor of Humane Letters from the University of Massachusetts, Lowell. As a teacher, Margot is loved, admired, and respected. She often seeks out young researchers and scientists and gives them personal advice and encouragement. And I was one of those fortunate ones who learned a great deal from her, and particularly in reviewing manuscripts. And she taught us to be always positive and constructive. She's a devoted wife, mother, grandmother, and a very gracious host. Her home is always open to her students and friends. Professor Beklick has dedicated her life's work to the treatment and prevention of lung diseases, and through her extensive teaching and research activities in developed and developing countries, she disseminated knowledge and skills to improve global lung health. And to me, there's no one more deserving than Professor Beklick to receive the Union Medal Ladies and gentlemen, may I present Professor Beckley.
I was quite overwhelmed to receive a letter from our president a few weeks ago informing me that the union's board of directors had decided to award me the union medal at this year's conference. In my reply, I told her how deeply honored I felt to be so selected by the union, which, as a member, I and many others cherish, respect, and try to support. The program of this conference, topics, speakers, participants, is a measure of the union's worldwide openness of spirit and concern for its mission across political boundaries, often difficult, to reach those touched by TB and lung diseases in all their modern-day complexities. My first contact with the union was when I was invited to prepare a paper on occupational lung disease, and of course TB can also be an occupational lung disease, at a time when the union was seeking to change its name from IUAT, International Union Against Tuberculosis, to IUAT-LD, and lung disease. A reflection of the belief in the 1970s that TB was on the wane globally. How wrong. The invitation was from the first union's committee on lung disease, whose members were Jacques Chrétien from Paris, John Murray from the US, Peter Macklem from Canada, and Anne Woolcock from Australia, all of whom had worked and or were committed to the union's mission in low-income countries. This year, the conference has been on strengthening resources to improve lung health. And as a member of the lung disease section of the union, I believe perhaps one of our most useful contributions to the union's activities has been to do just that in a very modest way compared to what others have done, but to strengthen human resources to improve lung health. I'm referring to the short-term courses, which Moira mentioned, in respiratory methods for the promotion of young lung health. The title, if I remember correctly, was The Brainchild of Don Enison, supported by a union publication of the same name. I wish I'd brought a copy to show you of the book, authored by Enison, Kennedy, David Miller, and Per Backey. Courses were held in a number of countries. I was concerned, actually, only with the four that were held in Kenya and one in South Africa. It has been a great pleasure to me to meet a number of those who had attended these courses, at this conference. One was Joseph Odhiambo of the Kenya Medical Research Institute, also studied at McGill University, where, as Maurice said, I now work, and he's been now working for several years in the CD US AIDS program. In other words, training in one area of research and one area of description is perfectly transferable to another. So I guess that's the lung disease contribution to TB. So being a member of the union, working in lung disease, has been a most enriching experience for me personally, and I have so many people to thank and a very special thank you to the Union Board of Directors for choosing me to honour me with this very beautiful medal. Thank you.
May I ask Marcos to come and present the Stop TB Partnership Koch Prize.
Thank you, Asma. I'm delighted and honored to present the first Stop TB Partnership Cochon Award. The Stop TB Partnership has joined forces with the Cochon Foundation of the Republic of Korea to honor those who work endless hours and achieve outstanding success in the fight against TB, those who work for a world free of tuberculosis. The first award consists of a medal that is going to be awarded today and a metallic prize of $65,000. And to tell you a little bit on the award and the history of that, I'm pleased to call Mr. Do Hyun Kim, chairman of the Cochon Foundation, to the podium for say a few words. Mr. Kim.
Executive directors, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Cochon Foundation, I would like to welcome you to the award ceremony for the Top TB Partnership Cochon Prize. We would like to extend our most sincere congratulations to this year's prize winners as the first laureates. The Stop TB Partnership Cochon Prize, supported by the Cochon Foundation of South Korea, will be given annually to individuals or organizations who have contributed in an extraordinary way to the effort to eliminate tuberculosis. If the Stop TB Partnership's global plan is fully funded and fully implemented, we will find the tools to vanquish this terrible disease. The Cochon Foundation has inaugurated this prize as a way of recognizing and rewarding those whose have worked forms the vanguard of efforts to execute a global plan and to eliminate TB. In 1919, a man named Jong-un Lee was born in an impoverished family in Chak-dong, a small family village in province of Chungnam in Korea. Although he was unable to receive a higher education, his native intelligence and perseverance helped him to transform the drugstore that he opened in 1941 into a successful manufacturing company, Jeonggundang Pharmaceutical Corporation. As his company's success grew, the late Chairman Lee became increasingly aware of the price barriers standing in the way of most Koreans' access to life-saving medications, among them anti-TB drugs. At the time, most of such drugs were imported. which drove prices higher. Lee initiated the first production in Korea of anti-TB drugs such as Esamptol and Rifampicin. With Lee's success came a desire to give back to the community. He began simply helping his employees to attend night school. Then, in 1973, he created the Kochon Foundation. It granted scholarships and funded research with assets that burgeoned from a modest $20,000 at its inception to $35 million in 2005. Chairman Jong-un Lee passed away in 1993, but left a last legacy. He bequeathed his remaining personal assets to the Kochon Foundation. The Kochon Foundation is proud to partner with the Stop TB Partnership in awarding this prize. The Stop TB Partnership, an alliance of more than 500 organizations, countries, and individuals united in the fight against TB, is housed within the World Health Organization's headquarters in Geneva. Both the foundation and the partnership feel it is extremely important to recognize the many people whose varied efforts are helping to win the global fight against TB. The first winners of the Stop TB Partnership and Kochon Prize to Stop TB are two exemplary individuals, Mr. Winston Zulu of Zambia and Dr. L.S. and Dr. L.S. Chauhan of India. Let me again extend my sincere congratulations to these winners. Thank you very much.
Stay with me. Stay with me. Okay. Thank you, Chairman Kim. The two winners, the coordinating board of the Stop TB Partnership, upon recommendation of the selection committee, awarded the Stop TB Partnership Kochon Foundation Award to L. Lakhbir S. Chauhan from the India Ministry of Health and Family Welfare. Dr. Chauhan of India Ministry of Health is a hard-driving leader who since 2002 has directed the expansion of the DOTS program in his country. As Deputy Director General and Program Manager of the National TB Control Program, he has been the driving force in dramatically increasing coverage and quality of the TB services in India, the country that bears the world's highest TB burden. By March 2006, 1.1 billion people, or 100% of the population, were covered by the TB program, growing more quickly than any other TB control program in the world. His accomplishment is remarkable, not only because of the lives saved in India itself, but also because of the example that he has set for other countries. It is hoped that in coming years, the Stop TB Partnership Kochon Award will recognize others whose methods and contributions are as groundbreaking and diverse as those of this year's recipients. Let me call Mr. Chauhan to the podium.
Dignitaries on the dais, ladies and gentlemen, I am deeply honored and humbled by this personal recognition of being awarded the coveted Kuchon Prize. I am grateful to the International Committee of the Stop TB Partnership and Kuchon Foundation for this award. While accepting this prize, I gratefully acknowledge the efforts and commitment of all the frontline TB workers of India. We have strived hard over the past decade to achieve 100% geographical dots coverage in India, as well as to maintain case detections and quality of care for TB. I express my deep gratitude to TB Team India, which has untiringly worked with me for the success of the program. This recognition today has strengthened our resolve and determination in the fight against TB. With the commitment of frontline workers and the highest level of the political and administrative support the program is receiving, it's beyond doubt that humanity's war on TB would be won in India. I would like to take this opportunity to also recognize the part played by the partners and donors in our endeavors and solicit their continued support. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The board decided that another winner will be given the award today, Winston Sulu. And you all, most of you all, about Winston. Winston is a dynamic speaker and a tireless advocate at the forefront of the TB-HIV battle. As one of 13 children in a Zambian family, he contracted HIV and later TB in 1997. Although his tuberculosis was cured, his four brothers were not so fortunate. All of them contracted and died of tuberculosis. Winston Sulu has demonstrated personal courage by disclosing his HIV status and advocating for improved TB-HIV collaborative activities to treat two diseases in one patient. He is a co-founder of the Cara Kabwe program for Cara Counseling, which is a provider of HIV/AIDS counseling in Zambia, and was co-president of TBTV.org, one of the first organizations for patients with TB. He is the South African representative for TB Alert, a British and international charity dedicated to stopping TB worldwide. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Winston Sulu.
This mic is working. Thank you very much, Dr. Marcus. Thank you very much to this Stop TB partnership, and thank you to WHO. I have as well a whole list of people to thank, because doing work around TB is not one individual's task, and you cannot say, I've achieved this alone. I think this needs teamwork. But there are a number of organizations that I have to mention that I've worked with, and we've gone round to talk to policymakers and lawmakers in many countries around the world. We have visited four of the G8 countries in their parliaments and in Congress and so on, trying to bring the human face of TB to them. So I'd like to thank the lobby organization Results, the Stop TB Partnership, the World Health Organization, WHO, for making it possible for me to share my story of living with the HIV-TB co-infection. Without these partners, I wouldn't have been able to visit and talk to law and policymakers around the globe. There have been times when I visited congressional offices in the U.S. where staff did not know that TB was an epidemic. I've seen disbelief when they learned that TB kills almost 2 million people every year. I've seen jaws drop when it is pointed out that a classic case of TB can be cured with drugs that cost less than $20. I have often mused that if the international community waged a war on TB, and to quote somebody who is not anyone's favorite, perhaps, and if we waged a war on TB and stayed the course until the job is done, only a fraction of the resources being used to liberate oil in Iraq would be needed. The international community seems to be very eager to impose sanctions and leave all options, including the use of force, on the table on the so-called rogue states. Yet the same international community does little to stop the genocide caused by government's lack of action on diseases like TB. Many African governments appended their signatures on the TB Emergency Declaration in Africa. Very few have taken actions to support that declaration. When governments behave like that, lives are lost needlessly. It is no different with a man called Chemical Ali who gassed his own citizens in Iraq. While it is true that governments cannot fight epidemics on their own, they need to provide leadership and the bulk of resources that are needed. Civil society and other interested parties can and do a lot of good work, but that is no reason for government's deadly inertia on this issue. Those that aspire for offices that are meant to provide leadership must do that when they get into the offices. Lack of resources should not be an excuse. And here I must mention that we're always talking about human resources. I'm surprised that very few governments give or are willing to give support to WHO to provide technical assistance. And so in a country like Zambia, we do have TB drugs, but we have very few human resources to make sure that the patient take their drugs well. I would like to conclude by thanking once more the partnership, WHO, Results, TB Elite, and especially those invisible individuals behind the scene in Geneva and Washington who heroically faced the nightmare of trying to communicate with me. I can be very difficult to communicate. I would like to mention just a few names. If I don't mention your name, please, it's not because you are not important. I'd like to thank you, Wynne de Guzman at the partnership, and Melan Vanti and your teams at Results. You are the ones who are truly fighting TB. I also would like to thank someone who is not here, Father Michael Kelly, who has always stood by my side. He was the founder of CARA Counseling and gives me support whenever I'm on the verge of collapse. A very special thanks to Patrick Bertrand, formerly of Massive Effort, but now it's called, what is it called? Something not very global health advocates. I liked Massive Effort, to be honest, for bringing an awareness to me of the link between TB and HIV. And lastly, I wish to pay special tribute to my wife and family who spend several months of every year on their own as I go around the world giving TB a human face. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And now you are invited to the cocktail reception at Level 4, Salon Concord.